it wouldn't be an episode of the KingCast without a little plug for our longest sponsor. That's right, the masters of microdosing themselves, Lumi Labs. Do you need a little help sleeping? Maybe just want to maintain a nice level of calm and chill throughout the day? Well, Lumi Labs has you covered. If you're stressed out or your mind likes to run a million miles a minute, then you might want to give Lumi Gummies a try. They offer indica, sativa, and hybrid gummies that are designed to be taken in smaller doses to maintain a level of calm throughout the day. Or if you just want the pleasant sensation of being a little bit stoned, you can take a couple more and you're good to go. You enjoy these gummies however you see fit. Myself, I like to pop a Lumi gummy before bedtime, and that helps me fight off insomnia and my dreaded vampiric sleep schedule that my body refuses to stray from without some sort of outside help. And the best part is you can get them sent straight to your front door, no matter what the marijuana laws are where you live. So check out microdose.com and see their wares. If you decide to pick something up, make sure to use the code KINKAST at checkout to get 30% off and get free shipping. That lets them know their ads worked, helps the show out, and you get a nifty little discount in the process. It's a win-win, babies. That's microdose.com, code KINKAST. And of course, I have to tell you that Fangoria has been at it for over 40 years and is better than ever. This magazine is not only gorgeous, it's highly collectible. And it's delivered right to your front door 4 times a year, each issue filled to the brim with articles exploring every nook and cranny of genre filmmaking, past, present, and future. With all the most exciting journalists, filmmakers, and horror know-alls to guide the way, including, from time to time, little old me. This high-quality writing will only ever appear within the physical pages of the magazine, never online. So if you want to join in on the fun, well, you're going to need to subscribe. And in order to do that, all you got to do is head on over to Fangoria.com and sign up. And if you use the code KINKAST at checkout, you will save a ginormous 25% off of your subscription. That's Fangoria.com, code KINKAST. Now on with the show.
Hi. My name is Stephen King.
He's gonna break!
Bedlam!
Bedlam! You guys wanna go see a dead body?
Well, sometimes that is better.
Hello and welcome back to the KingCast on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Vespi, and today we are going to be talking about how all children are evil monsters with a new guest to the KingCast, who happens to be a teacher as well as a stand-up comedian. He first popped up on my radar when I stumbled upon the Netflix reality show The Trust, and I caught him when he came through Austin and tore the roof off of Cap City Comedy Club here. He's also the host of the Social Studies podcast, which can be found wherever you get your podcast. Please welcome Gaspar Randazzo to the KingCast stage. Now, there was a little talk at the beginning where I was asking you if I was pronouncing your name right before we started recording. You're like, we'll do it on air. So I'm fully prepared to be schooled
here.
Listen,
you're pretty much right. But basically, it's technically my name is Gaspare. But yeah. I would never say it like that because to me it's like douchey and bougie.
Right.
And I feel like people are like, Gaspare. And like they think like I'm like trying to be something I'm not. So I'm like very Americanized. So I just say Gaspar. Like Gaspar. Yeah. Like Casper the Ghost with a G. Jasper like with a G. You know, just keep it very simple. Although my explanation was not simple at all.
No, well, there's I think that the reason why that was in my mind is because I first saw you on The Trust, and that's what everybody called you on that show. And that just happened to be, like, I'm not a huge reality show viewer, believe it or not, but, like, there's something that happened during lockdown where I just, like, I turned to reality TV in much the same way that I turned to YouTube reaction videos and stuff, where it's just like, I just need something that's not a story that I know or, you know, falls into a three-act structure. I just need to watch people. This was like, you know, obviously I think this came out a little bit after lockdown, but that was something that my then girlfriend, now fiance, were watching, and she absolutely lost her mind when you were the teacher and like, oh, well, I'm rooting for him because she's also a teacher. So,
You know, what's funny is like, so for those of you who don't know, I was on a show called The Trust. It was on Netflix. It came out almost a year ago today. It's funny because like, so I was doing stand-up comedy for a long time, for 7 years before the show came out. So when I went on the show, I was like, oh, I do stand-up comedy. And they were like, yeah, no, we don't care. Like, we're marketing you as the teacher on the show. And I'm like, right. Oh, come on. Like, let me just like be fun and have fun. And they're like, nah, you're the teacher. So like, it would be funny. Cause like, I would have these like funny moments and then like, they'd like edit it to be like me giving like some moral lesson to everybody. And I'm like, no, I'm like, that's not what I was doing. I was just making fun of everybody. Like, why are they making it like that? But
they definitely cut it to make it look like you were the, cause there's always the, you know, the backstabber. There's always the pure innocent one. And there's always the heart of the group. Like you always find those tropes in reality TV now. And they definitely, I mean, listen, it could be worse. They could have made you the heel of
I wasn't the bitch. I wasn't the asshole. Like, yeah. And the thing is like, you go into these very mindful of that. Like I knew my role. I knew they put me on to like be comic relief. Yeah. I knew they knew like I'm married. I have kids. Like they played all that up. So like, I just said in my head, like, just live that role. Cause that's what they want. And like, I won't end up a villain on Netflix. Like that was like my mentality going in. But I just played the game as myself. Like I not played the game, but like I just went in and was myself. And like, there was funny moments. Like everybody in the house would be screaming and fighting with each other. And then the camera would zoom in on me and I'd be steaming my pants. And they're like, and I'm like, oh, hey. Like I'd wave to the cameras, be like, I'm steaming my pants. Cause it's just like, you know, you can't, some of these people just fought for 30 straight days. Like I don't live my life like that.
Right.
So like, I just had a good time. I was myself. So I'm glad that came through, I guess.
Well, that the premise of the trust is very much something that like really encourages like backstabbing and stuff. They seem to go out of their way even more so than usual reality TV to turn everybody against each other. So again, it's probably a good thing that you were, you know, that you went in with that mindset, because I think it could be very easy to, even if you just went in like, oh, I'm just going to play to win and play, you know, even with the group, you could suddenly look like the shithead, you know?
Yeah.
And
and the game was designed so that people backstab each other, but I went in, I was just happy to be on TV. So I really, I was like, let me just see how long I can ride this thing out for.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, you had an instant fan with my girlfriend, who's a middle school English teacher, or she was at the time. She actually had to quit because it was being way too rough on her, which might fit in with some of the content we're going to be talking about a little bit later on with the story Suffer the Little Children. But you became a favorite, and then she's the one who saw, I was like, oh my God, Gasper's coming to Austin. And so we, you know, bought our tickets and saw you at Cap City, and was not all that surprised to see that a good chunk of your audience were teachers.
My wife's nightmare demographic, females between the ages of 21 to 45. Yes. That's my whole audience of all teachers. But yeah, I mean, it's teachers, but as I always say, like, you're not a teacher. I mean, yes, you're with someone who is, but like, even as a non-teacher, it's still stories that you can understand and relate to, because I always say, like, everybody's been to school. So like, you can understand what the hell I'm talking about. And also like, they're just stories about, I'm not just like, oh, here's a math lesson plan. It's stories about crazy things that happened in my classroom that are funny to non-teachers and teachers. So like, I always try to say like, cause I hate when people are like, oh, I was going to come, but I thought it was only for teachers. I'm like, why? Like I'm a person too. Also, you know, I make fun of the audience half the time.
Oh yeah.
So, you know,
well, my audience in particular deserved it. There were ladies in the front row that were very
cheering about their birthday party.
Yep, that's the one. And you know, I would say they were like in their 40s or 50s or something, and they were just drunk and real happy to be there.
Yeah,
but sometimes let you know in time, you know, in parts where it wasn't their turn to interact with you.
I had a great time. I remember backstage, all I kept hearing was them yelling, it's my birthday, it's my birthday. So I remember just coming out and being like, nobody gives a fuck, it's your birthday. That was the first thing I said. And like they laughed and it was fine. But like, I was like, oh, I can't take a whole night of people telling me it's their birthday.
Right. Thank you for accepting the invitation. Especially
thank you for having me.
Especially when you're just like so open to figuring a topic, because you are not a giant Stephen King nerd, but you know, you said that your wife was, right?
Okay, I'm going to just preface. I'm not a reader at all.
Yeah.
The last book I read was probably the book Holes when I was in eighth grade, and I'm 35 right now. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a big reader. My wife is a huge reader. Mm-hmm. Like, she has two Kindles for no reason. And she buys hard copy books and reads everything. All I read is sports articles and the newspaper mm-hmm. on my phone. That's it. Just a lot of football. And that's it. So when you ask me to read something, that's pretty much the first thing I've read in about 22 years. So you should be happy that I am. Well, I'm grateful for you that you exposed me to a book. So,
well, it was a short story. So let's not get too crazy here.
Well, a short story to you is a long, drawn out read.
Your next assignment is 11/22/63, which is a 900-page book.
And you know, it's funny. My wife goes, "Oh, you should talk about that book." And I said, "I don't even know what it is." She's like, "Well, there's a whole show. Isn't that the one about JFK? Right?"
Yep. Yeah, it's James Franco.
James Franco. Yeah. So she's like, "There's a show. Just watch it." I'm like, "The interview's tomorrow." I was like, "I don't even have time to go to the bathroom during the day. When am I watching a 22 episode TV show?" So.
And it's not great. It's okay. The show's okay. It's a great book. And I think the reason why she might have said that would have been a good one for you is because the main character is a teacher who goes back and essentially the boilerplate of it is he finds that there's a doorway that takes you back to, I think, 1960 or 61. Mm-hmm. And if you go back through the doorway, you come out exactly when you entered. No matter how long you spend there, right? So,
okay.
And so the idea is that, you know, that this is 3 years before the Kennedy assassination, what the world maybe goes to shit. Everybody's like, that's the demarcation line. The assassination of Kennedy, led to the assassination of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. And I think I said assassination, and I'm going to keep it in because I'm an honest man. Assassination. So this teacher decides to change history for the better. And part of it's discovering, is there a single shooter? Is it Lee Harvey Oswald? Is there more stuff? He's investigating all this stuff. It's a really cool premise. And and I love the fact that it's not like, here's a magic doorway that takes you to Dallas the day of the shooting. It's like, no, if you do something and you fuck up, it's another 3 years of your life, you know, to go back.
You gotta stick it through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know, I was right after Austin, I actually went to Dallas on that tour after you saw me in Austin. And I went to the JFK, to the museum, it was 107 degrees when I went.
Yep.
So I'm walking because I was like, oh, I want to just walk and explore Dallas. So I'm literally drenched in sweat walking to this museum, just following my GPS. Right. So I get to as I'm about to get to the museum, Dallas, there was homeless people everywhere outside the museum. And this lady comes up to me and she's like, "Here, sir, have a water bottle." And I was like, "Oh, thank you." I was so hot and sweaty. I just was drenched in sweat. So I took it and I'm like, "Oh, all right, thanks." And then I looked and I realized they thought I was homeless. I was like, I saw the truck. It was helping the homeless, one of those and I was like, "Oh, no, 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 no." I was like, "Give this to someone who needs it." And she's like, "You need it." And I'm like, "No, I'm really okay." I was like, I'm going in this museum. Like, it was just this moment where I was trying to convince these people that I wasn't homeless and they weren't believing me. So.
And then you drank the whole thing, eyeballing the homeless person across the way.
I crushed it
and then pulled out your wallet and bought another drink. Yeah.
Yeah, but I did go to the museum. Have you ever been to the museum?
I did when I was a kid. I moved to Texas when I was 12. So I moved here in middle school, and I think it was either late middle school or early high school where we took a field trip to the book depository. And it's boring. My fiance lived in California. She lived in Georgia when we met, and we did a long distance thing. She moved here and she's super. She's like, I want to go to Dallas. I want to go to Houston. I'm like, "Do you?" "Yeah, I don't think you do really." And she's like, "No, I want to go. It's going to be fun." I'm just like, "Dallas. I mean, if you like buildings and I don't know, fast food chains, it's like, Dallas is the place for you." You know?
Yeah. I was okay about it, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like, I was like, okay, this is Dallas. All right.
I think the JFK museum is something, especially if you're interested in history, is something you do once and you go, yep, certainly it's weird to think about, you know, sitting on the grassy knoll and like they actually paint the streets like, here's where Kennedy was shot. Yeah, yeah. You know, it's
here's
like,
here's three circles where bullets landed. It's cool. Mm-hmm. But like, honestly, like the actual upstairs itself was just all reading. Like, and I felt like I was like, oh, I could have just read this online. Like, you know what I mean? Like right. It wasn't, nothing there was like, oh my God, this is changing my life. Like, I just felt like, eh.
Okay. Yeah, they don't even like have like a game or anything where you can try to take the president's head off.
Correct.
You know,
yeah. Like
Sniper Elite or something, you know?
Yeah. They it's just like, show you where he was shot from. I was like, okay, I know what a window looks right. like.
Yep. Now that I'm on a list, let's move into Stephen King stuff. So we usually ask what your Stephen King origin story is around here, which is to say, when did King first pop up on your radar as a name like, oh, Stephen King? You know, for many of us, it's a book. Many of us, it's a movie. Like I've read everything King's written almost. I think I'm a couple of novels and a few short stories short, but I've read, you know, I don't know, years worth of Stephen King stuff. And even me, I was a movie guy. So I started with his movies. So
how many books did he write?
He's up to 63, 64, 65 ish now.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
He must be good at this writing stuff.
He does it a lot. He does it a lot.
All right. So I have two stories for you.
Okay,
number one, when I was young, whereas in like most kids were watching like Disney movies, mm-hmm. for some strange reason, my parents, we watched Clockwork Orange as a child. I remember watching Clockwork Orange and I remember watching Pet Sematary. Now, those are not movies that a 7-8-year-old should watch,
uh-huh.
but it wasn't really like that in my house. My
was
dad
this like
thought,
a hippie experiment kind of no, thing? Like teaching no, you no. words that don't exist and languages that don't exist kind of thing?
No, it was like kind of the opposite. It was like my dad was like a tough-nosed like Brooklyn cop.
Yeah.
And like it was kind of like a expose them to this stuff, you know? Like let's right. expose them to it so that like nothing shocks them. So like, we just like, I remember like watching Pet Sematary and then Rocky died, my dog. And like, we buried him in the yard. And I just remember thinking like, he's coming back. Like, you know, like this is going to be bad. He's going right. to reenter. And then there was that book. And then there was The Shining, which I remember being about like maybe 11 or 12 years old. And me and my friends like got together and we were like, let's watch The Shining. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we thought like this was going to like be this like cool horror experience. And we were kids. Maybe uh-huh. I was a little old. I was maybe 12 or 13. So I remember watching it with a friend of mine and like his sister and like a big group of us. And I was like sitting on the bed with his sister and she was my age and they were twins. And like the girl and I started like kind of making out and her brother was like 10 feet ahead of us. And like, he was like glued to watching the show. And I remember just like spending the whole Shining, like secretly making out behind this kid's back with this girl. So I didn't like fully watch the movie.
So it's your favorite movie that you've ever seen? It's
still to this day, yes.
When you say twins, were they identical twins or fraternal?
No, fraternal.
Because if it was identical, then you add a whole weird parallel to the Grady twins there and you know.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, they were.
That's your friend that you're making out with different genitals. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, that too. Yeah. So, so I remember that. And then like when I got older, I remember like when I was like 21, no, when I was a little older, like 23, my wife was like, she was my girlfriend at the time. She's like, you never saw The Shining. So I told her that story. And I was like, honestly, it's going to be really hard to top that experience. So we watched it. Definitely was not as fun watching it with my girlfriend who became my wife. But, it was interesting. And it's funny because like as an adult, that movie like changes. The older you get, mm-hmm. the more that movie changes. Like as a 12-year-old, you're like, oh my God, this guy's crazy, you know? And then like as a 22-year-old without kids, without any of that, I'm like, all right, like, you know, this was like a fun adventure. And now, like, I recently watched it as a 35-year-old mm-hmm. with two kids who, you know, is married. And I'm like, no, I get it. Like, I'm not trying to kill my whole life, but like, I get like going into the woods with your family, like mm-hmm. to be in this cabin, you know, not a cabin, a mansion, right. but like, and I was like, I could totally see going crazy, mm-hmm. like why that would make you go crazy. So, you know, that is the evolution of my Stephen King experience.
Yeah. And when you become an alcoholic and then you get sober, then it'll have a whole different
I'm sure. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, and I think like, and I've seen Misery,
yeah,
with Kathy Bates, yeah. Like, and like, you know, that's like also another one that has kind of changed like meaning. And I am not at all like famous. I don't think I am. I never look at myself as that, because like, I'm still a teacher. Like, I'm still as regular can be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, because of Netflix, because of stand-up comedy, like it is, you know, you do have people who are a little nuts who yeah. come out of the woodwork and reach out to you and send you weird messages every day for the last 3 years.
Like, come on my Stephen King podcast. Yeah.
No, because you were normal about it. And I have people who send me very different messages, like of them like wearing a robe every day for 3 years, wishing me a good day, just sending me a video of them saying, hey, have a great day. And you know, weird stuff like that. Right. So, you know, you can totally see how, you know, Misery can happen.
Uh-huh.
Misery. Yeah. The Misery is the one where she kidnaps him, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She rescues him and then holds him hostage.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So like, I could totally understand that movie and book much better now as an adult who has tasted some little amounts of, you know, success. So definitely different meaning.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I know that we're, you know, you reading the short story for me is probably not gonna, you know, turn you into a big Stephen King reader, but I think you would be really fascinated if you ever did dive into his stuff, you know, with both feet, because he was a teacher himself before he, you know, became Stephen King. Mm-hmm. And that's worked his way into a lot of his stuff. We talked about 11/22/63. That's about a teacher. And you know, the story we're about to talk about has focused on a teacher. This one going crazy. Hopefully you don't relate to this one too much. You probably do a little bit, but
a little bit.
You know, but there's this interesting thread of academia that goes through his work in, you know, how many people end up being teachers, how many of his lead characters, protagonists,
yeah.
And a lot of it, I think, is just because King writes what he knows, and that's something he knows. You know, he was a teacher. So,
and that's the funny part. Just to like go back to that with the stand-up comedy stuff, it's like sometimes people will come and be like, "Well, you know, you do talk about teaching a lot," and I'm like, "But that's my life." You know what I mean? Like, just like if you were a firefighter and you did, you know, stand-up comedy, what would the majority of your set be? Just like when you hang out with your friends, whatever your job is what you tend to talk about. So like, it's always funny to me when people are like shocked, and I'm like, but that's what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. Like, so yeah, anyway,
so let's dive into the story here. Normally I ask the guest to kind of just give a brief synopsis. It can be two sentences long. Teacher does this, teacher crazy or not. Maybe, I don't know. You could do it that way, or you can go in depth. Just remind people, what's the story just broadly about? And we can dive into it on the
new. So the story that I just recently read right before we came on this podcast is, well, once I saw it was 11 pages, I was like, I could knock that out in 10 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I was like, more than enough time. What the story is about, it's about a teacher. She comes to school one day. She's like this tough teacher. And all of a sudden she starts like basically getting a bad vibe from one of the students. Mm-hmm. And she feels like all of a sudden she goes to the bathroom. She's not feeling well. And she kind of feels like one of the students, a kid named Robert, was possessed in some degree and feels like he did something to her. Mm-hmm. And later comes out, confronts the kid about it, and he admits that he's a demon, basically shows her that he's a demon, and is like, so like, he tells her, like, you know, we're not alone. I'm not alone. Like, there's 11 of us in this class. And she then takes it upon herself, which, by the way, when I was reading that, I was like, all right, this Stephen King guy, he's onto something here. Because I was like reading it and I was like, oh, this is kind of creepy as hell. I'm like, that makes sense. That checks out with all the movies.
Right. Like with my the whole wife master was like horror title and whatnot.
Yeah. Like my wife's like, why are you surprised? Like, this is literally what he does. I'm like, yeah, no, I didn't know that. So then she takes it upon herself to bring the kids into a soundproof room for testing and kills the kids one by one. And eventually ends up, well, do you want me to give away the ending?
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, eventually ends up in a mental institution where she then kills herself.
Yeah.
Right? Did I get it right?
You got it. Okay. And, you know, there's a lot of interesting things to dive into here. And one of the interesting things that I want to bring up to you is that this was a story that King wrote in what I call his titty magazine era. So this is before Carrie came out.
I saw Carrie as well.
What's that?
Seen Carrie as well.
Oh, good. Well, there you go. You've seen Carrie. So that's the thing about Stephen King. And I've reached out to people on the show before that's like, oh, I'm not a King expert. It's like, you know, you don't have to be. Everybody's seen some Stephen King something, you know.
Just pulled up like Stephen King movies. Uh-huh. Dr. Sleep is him. Children of the Corn. It. Yeah. I knew it was. I've seen
Shawshank Redemption. Stand By Me. Yeah.
Those are Stephen King?
Those are Stephen King. Yeah.
Wow, he's pretty good. You got to let him know.
Yeah, okay, I will. I'll say, Gaspare says you're great.
Wow, Desperation, The Mist.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Wow, yeah. The Green Mile is it?
The Green Mile, yep.
Oh, I love Stephen King.
Yeah, see, that's everybody loves Stephen King.
What a great guy.
So he in, I think it was 74-ish was when Carrie was published, and that's the thing that changed his life. He was able, it wasn't even the hardback. I think it was the soft cover that, you know, the trade paperback paid him, you know, like I think a couple hundred grand or whatever. And at that point, this is a guy that had been living in a trailer, you know, it's like he'd been barely, you know, he's swapping bills to pay the lights, you know, won't get cut off for a month so he can pay the phone bill this month. He was that kind of person working as a teacher.
That's amazing. Yeah. And, how long did he teach for?
I don't think he was too long. I think he taught for 3 or 4 years maybe before, but he also had a family and kids and stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you know how it is. And so one of the things that he would do to bring in extra money was write the short stories. And the only place that were really regularly buying the stuff that he would want to write were titty magazines. They were Cavalier. I don't think he even got into Playboy, but, you know, it was all these like B and C grade nudie mags that would publish short fiction. Right.
Interesting.
And so a lot of his short work from this era is like extra EC Comics style, like gory and horror filled and sexy and stuff, because he's playing to an audience, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
What I think is really interesting about this one in particular is that when he hit it big, he took a lot of those short stories and put them in his first short story collection, which is called Night Shift. And that was in the late 70s. And then he did one in the early 80s called Skeleton Crew, where he brought, a lot more of those old ones and then, you know, wrote some new ones. He waited until the 90s to publish this one in Nightmares and Dreamscapes, even though it had originally been published in 1972 in Cavalier in one of the titty mags. And I have to wonder if he held on to it for a while, because he wrote another novella under a pseudonym called Rage. And Rage, it's a story about a student who kills their teacher and then holds the class hostage.
Interesting.
It's not an amazing novella, or, you know, pulpy paperback, you know, size book. But it, you know, it's good, but he ended up pulling it, from circulation, 'cause there were a couple of instances where, somebody either brought a gun to school or like shot up, you know, a student shot up a school and either cited that story or cited or had a copy of that or whatever. So he, King, kind of held it back. And I wonder if, since this is another school violence story, if he held on to it for a chunk of time before publishing it in 93.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would make sense just because, like, if you already got the heat on you from something else, you know, you're not like looking to bring more upon yourself. So,
yeah, but it's, yeah, I think it's a great story. I think it's super effective. The teacher, Miss Sidley, is really well described, and she's kind of, she strikes me as a kind of a caricature, like of just that old, you know, strict school marm persona, right? She's,
I think she's in her, just like, an old, you know, lady, like that old, like crankety teacher.
Yeah, she's seen everything. She doesn't put up with any shit. But I like the way that he's very subtle with this. And I think if they ever adapted this into a movie, I know there's been some people who've done it as short films and whatnot. But if somebody ever seriously adapted it, I think they could totally play into this where you don't know for a good chunk of this, like, what's in her mind and what isn't. And
well, like, that's kind of how I read it. Like, I read it like, all right, this is a lady who's going crazy, imagining the class is turning on her, and she's going to be like the crazy person in the end, which it also is kind of up for interpretation too, that maybe she did imagine, but she did kill everybody and ended up in a mental institution.
Yes.
So, you know,
and but there is, it leaves you, the story leaves you on this thing where they're trying to rehab her when she's in the mental institution. And so they bring in, you know, they probably wouldn't have this part today, but they bring in a group of children to do shock therapy, I guess, some sort of therapy with her to see if she's still has these instincts and to harm children and think children are all being turned into these demonic, alien possessed or whatever the hell things. And the children they bring in are all Down syndrome kids, and he uses a very not PC term.
Yeah, he said they
to describe
the R word. Yeah, which I was like, ooh, and then I'm like, you know what, but that was the term of the times, and what they called them. So
I think he called catastrophically R word, and I was just like, okay, that's a little rough to take in the year of our Lord 2024, but but anyway, like what's interesting about that is like she's like just falls into her normal habits with these kids and is caring and whatever. And then like one of them like is just looking at her in a different way. And she gets really quiet and says, I want to be excused from this. And then it's that night she kills herself. And then you switch perspective to the guy who was like setting this up as a therapy, who now starts to think maybe she's not wrong. I got to keep an eye on these kids. Right.
Well, that's like, why I was like, in the end, I'm like, oh wait, like, was this all always imagined? You know, like it's up for interpretation, I guess, as the, you know, as I guess everything is with reading.
Right.
I'm not a reader, so I don't know.
No, you're totally fine. Do you think that the story is more interesting if it is a psychological thing where she does go insane and it is all real life and she's just breaking? Or do you think it's more interesting if she's right and there is this growing number taking over children?
I think it was cooler if she just imagined everybody, because like, I know teachers who have cracked, unfortunately. Yeah. And like, it's a real thing. And I know teachers who think like all the kids hate them. And I know teachers, like, I could totally see there being a teacher who thinks like every kid in the room wants them dead. Like, you know, so like to me, reading it under that like guise where I thought like in the end, she was going to be just crazy and went out and killed all these kids. And then like, they were going to find out that they were all just normal and she was the crazy one. Mm. That to me was like a cooler way to look at it.
Yeah. You know? See, if I was adapting this, I think one of that Robert kid is like kind of the focal point. And it's really cool how she first starts to think that he's not himself is because she has a trick when she's writing on the blackboard where she uses her thick glasses as kind of a mirror reflection, where she can see the kids behind her if they're not on task or if they're making a face or sticking a middle finger up or whatever. And so she has this reputation of being almost supernatural, right? Of like knowing when kids are being bad, right? And punishing them for that. And so I think you would, an adaptation could almost be done as a battle of wits between this Robert kid and her, and what is he just fucking with her and saying that all these things and just playing on her suspicions and like, you know what I mean? Like if that kid is like actively pushing her towards insanity, I think is a really fun idea. And I think that's something you can actually stretch out into like a feature film if you wanted to.
Yeah. Because like, that's the thing. Like I've definitely had kids who I know are like pushing my buttons just to get a rise out of me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it's a thing. It's real. Like kids do that. My own children do that. You know what I mean? So like, that's how I think it. That's how I saw it. I mean,
So do you have any kids that you've taught demonic that you are pretty sure are could have been a doppelganger and just an evil little demon inside?
Well, listen, I mean, I've had students who have gone on and committed major crimes and have done pretty horrible things and have, you know, unfortunately, I've had students who've shot people. I've had students who've killed people, like not when I had them as a student, but like, whatever. But, you know, like I've had things happen. So it's like that is a real thing, unfortunately. You know what I mean? Like I teach in New York City. It's not like a perfect society over here. No. And, you know, so I think there's definitely moments where I'm like, oh, if I push this kid any further, like he could legitimately kill me. Yeah. And like, you know, like that goes through your head sometimes, which is kind of nuts to think. But listen, as people, we take this risk every time you leave the house, you know, or when you're in your own house, someone could kick your door in and come in and do something, God forbid. But I mean, if you're listening to this right now, you're probably a fan of horror to some degree. So, you know, like that's the reality. Anytime you leave your house, a person could walk up to you and do something. So, you know, I don't live my life like, is one of my students going to kill me today? But it definitely can. It definitely does strike a chord and hit home reading an article like this for sure. A story.
One of the things that's an undercurrent here is there's a whole section where the teacher is thinking about how the kids these days aren't like the kids of generations past. And that's something that every generation says, like the kids were better in my day. The kids were better in my day. But I think King does something really interesting here where he doesn't just go, all these dumb kids, they don't have respect. It's like he actually has has Sidley like talk, you know, to herself in her mind going like, no, you know, it's not like my kids, you know, kids when I was young were any more respectful or rule following, but there's just something about the isolation that these kids are facing. And that really kind of struck me now, you know, with this new generation, which is nuts hearing stories from, you know, my fiance about, you know, when she was, a full-time teacher, you know, she's subbing now and loving it. But, when she was a full-time teacher, like she had some pretty insane, you know, stories about, you know, the kids coming out of lockdown and, you know, the attention span stuff and the tech addiction stuff and, and just how, you know, even the kids that she, you know, had taught 3 or 4 years prior didn't have the same, I don't know, short fuse and, you know, she wasn't getting chairs thrown at her, you know, with the same frequency as she did, you know, with those kids. Yeah.
So it's interesting. I actually, when I read that part, I was like, that's like, cause I thought that's exactly where it was going, where it was just going to be like, the kids have no respect these days, but it didn't say that. It was like, no, kids are always disrespectful. That's not new.
Yeah.
But like she was, you know, or whatever, the respect level's the same, but it's so funny that like, when I read that, because so I had parent teacher a few nights ago, right? Mm-hmm. And this just piggybacks on what you said. So when I called the parents, cause we have to do them over the phone, it's not in person anymore in New York. Okay. And I was like, okay, so, you know, Johnny is a good kid. I was like, and one of the things I always say to them, like, if it's a good kid, I said, you know, believe it or not, I'm like, they're one of the only kids in the class who say please and thank you. Uh-huh. And the parents laugh, but I'm like, no, that's not a joke. Like, most kids don't say please or don't say thank you or don't even acknowledge the adult in the room. I'm like, no, your child's like actually one of the ones who kind of gives a shit about that there's people and they're not the only person. Cause like I will walk around and give out 30 handouts to 30 kids and maybe two of them will be like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Maybe two. And that's if they're looking up from their phones and even notice that I'm there to hand it to them. So it is very interesting that that's like a real thing that like we say this stuff to them.
Yeah, it's so funny. The phone thing is a big thing. Like Kelsey, my fiance, she really wants to like do some kind of study on tech addiction and how that's impacted kids. Cause she firmly believes that we're all tech addicted, you know, and it's not just limited to kids, but the kids in particular who haven't, you know, I'm old enough to have known a time before we had a little dopamine hit in your pocket. We didn't grow up with that in the same way. But it was funny. We were watching Lord of the Rings. She had never watched it. And we get to Gollum and the way Gollum was with the ring. She was like, that's the kid. That's what kids are with their phone.
If it makes you feel better, I've never seen it either.
Oh, good. Well, there's a character called Gollum who's really obsessed.
I've heard of it.
Yeah. And he's like, does anything and like just freaks out when the ring's taken from him and like just throws temper tantrums and stuff. And she was like, that's kids with the phones. Like she got punched in the stomach as a teacher and, and all this stuff. And it was almost always around either having to take a kid's phone or like a tablet. Yeah.
But you know what? And meanwhile, we're not even allowed to take them anymore.
Oh, really?
So it's literally, in New York, we're not allowed to take them because like if God forbid, like you take it and then it breaks or it was broken and then they accuse you of breaking it, you know? So like, there's a lot of like that surrounding it. So we just don't take them anymore. So it's like almost comical because you're just like, hey, put your phone away. No. Okay.
Right.
Like, that's it. Like, that's literally it. That's all you could do. Just, okay. Well, like, it'd be better if you did. No, I'm good. Okay.
You teach high school, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I teach high school. Yeah.
I wonder if it's the same. It probably isn't. But one thing that blew my mind talking to Kelsey was that there was something about, she was telling me a story about like, somebody who like turned in zero assignments or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, well they fail. And she's like, no, we have to.
You don't fail.
Yeah. You just have to keep giving them like chances and, you know, they miss a test or they If they do perform badly on a test, they get a 30 or something. They can just keep retaking it and retaking it and retaking the exact same thing. I'm like, holy shit, where the fuck was that when I was a kid? I was like, yep, sorry. I had a geometry, no, not geometry. I think it was Algebra 1 teacher, Senor Barrientes. And I'll remember this guy for the rest of my life because he was a guy that pretty much only he let the book teach. He only sat at his desk and said, okay, read this. And if you had a question, he always said, it's in the book. And he was one of those kind of teachers, which isn't very helpful when you're not great at math, right?
Yeah, of course.
And
that was the old way. That was the way.
That was the way. I would say that was the only teacher that I had, at least for me, that where that was the, that would, you know, if I had a question for like my English teacher or whatever, they would come and be like, okay, what's the question? Yeah. Okay. So this is what you're missing here, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
This dude was just totally checked out. I think he was like maybe a few years away from retirement. And he was just like, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm just sitting here watching the clock kind of thing. But that motherfucker failed me by 1 point and I had to take algebra, essentially algebra for dummies, you know, the next year. They called it something else that wasn't that, but it was essentially, these
remedial,
are all the people that,
remedial math. I took it as well.
Yeah. And I'm like that motherfucker. So if like by 1 point he failed, like I failed the class by 1 point and he couldn't have just done me a solid, you know, and on my final just bumped it up or whatever, or let me retake it. But that's not how, that's not how it was for me, but it's crazy to me that that's the way education is, that they're, you know, I know that that's one thing that she's always frustrated with, is that there's just isn't any consequences for anything.
There's no like limit on when you can hand the work in. So like every night, like the work gets assigned, but they literally can hand it in whenever. There's no limit to when they can hand it in. So like we could take points off, but like you can't say like, oh, you missed it, you're not getting the work. Like they basically have forever to get it to you. So, yep, that's fun. So, and they also, attendance doesn't matter. So like they could miss the whole year, but if they hand in a few assignments, you have to pass them.
Wow.
It's a weird system.
Yeah. I mean, and I get that a lot of this is in place to protect, you know, to keep certain, you know, kids from falling behind in ways that, you know, myself and a lot of other people maybe fell behind in my generation. And I think that's ultimately, I don't know, a good instinct, but it just doesn't make any sense to me. And the whole point of school, this, you know, when you're, especially when you're talking middle and high school, is to really kind of set you up to be a human being in the world. And that is not how anything works really in the world.
Yeah. So they're not trying to set us up for human beings anymore.
No,
it's weird. Yeah. It's just a weird system now. I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it, because what are we setting them up? Hey, you can hand in the work whenever, yep. You know, you should just get it to us if you can. Don't even worry about coming to school. It's optional. Yeah. So, right. Yeah.
Crazy. Well, I don't know what that has to do with Suffer the Little Children, but we got on a little bit of a let's talk about the state of modern education. And it's only going to get better as we're going forward, right? It's only going to get better in the coming years.
Yeah, sure. Everything always gets better.
Yeah, that's eventually how it always works.
So nothing changes. We're good.
So what do you think of the depiction of the evil kids? I like the age range that he picks here, that it's third graders, you know, and that they're described as like kind of equally childlike things, but there's something sinister about it. Because listen, if you spend any time around kids, that's pretty much it. It's like they are super sweet and angelic and like, you know, little God's little miracles. And they're also the most fucking evil little gremlins you've ever seen in your life, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because like I have a second grader. So like my son's in second grade. So like reading it, it's just like I'm just picturing him and his friends, you know, like doing that like sly little like we didn't do anything. Uh-huh. Like look around the room. But meanwhile, like, then I was like, oh, she's killing everybody. Now I wish I didn't picture my son and all his friends.
You done fucked up.
Like, oh, and this, I feel like a piece of shit right now. So,
yeah, that's the thing of, there's a Stephen King movie that is coming out next year called The Long Walk, which for a long time, people have been trying to make this for a long time. The guy that made Shawshank Redemption and The Green Mile and The Mist, Frank Darabont, for a while had the rights to this. And it's an interesting thing. It's kind of, it's something that King wrote when he was in college. And he's like, this is kind of an angry anti-authoritarian screed, but it's set in this kind of futuristic world where like a near future world where a military regime is in charge. And one of the things that they do is they have this contest every year where the youth of America participate in this thing where 100 boys, it's always boys, start at the Canadian main border and then walk south. Cool. Or it's vice versa. It might be they start there and they walk towards the border. I don't remember which. Anyway, they essentially clear the highway and these kids walk and they have to keep a pace of 3 miles per hour. And it's like the last person standing wins. But the people that and when they win everything that they could want. You know, everybody's poor and everybody needs money and medicine and all this stuff. So it's this is your riches. It's like you win the lottery if you win this competition. But if your pace falters, you get 3 warnings. And on the 3rd warning, an army dude puts a bullet in your head. And so every, you know, if you cramp up too bad, you get 3 warnings, and then you get taken out right in front of all the cheering crowd of people that line up to watch this. Right. It's a really fascinating story, but for a long time, you know, that has had trouble making it to the screen because it's a
children.
It's, you know, I mean, I think it's described as probably high school aged, you know, middle age to high school age. I think they're aging it up well, just a tad, maybe high school, college age for the movie. Something similar, there's just a reaction people have to, you know, to kids. And it's interesting to me kind of looking at a lot of King stuff is really, you know, set in this coming of age time period. And there's so many horrific things that we take on a daily basis and kind of go, man, yep, Uvalde really sucked. And yep, this new school shooting really sucked. And we're not going to do anything about it. But at the same token, you know, people would revolt against having, you know, a movie or a TV show
about that,
that would feature that kind of stuff. And I think about that when I read the short story, and it's still shocking, you know, even now, to read about, you know, this teacher, this old lady that has a Luger, you know, has an old German pistol that her brother got off of a Nazi in the final days of World War II or whatever, you know, and just popping, you know, these third graders in the head because they, you know, they're little giggly demons or whatever, you know. But there's now, something really shocking about that.
You know, it that's a cool concept. I really like that. Of the, you know, it kind of reminds me of, what was that the movie, like Hunger Games? It was in that like Maze Runner.
Yeah, Maze Runner, right? Battle Royale. It predated all that. And The Running Man, which is another story that Stephen King wrote. The movie, there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, The Running Man, that has, it's an adaptation of it, but it has nothing, almost nothing to do with the novella, which is way darker. It's way more in the tone of this, where it's like really.
No, but I'm just saying, like, it's like that dystopian, like, future with, like, hey, kids, survive. We're going to give you some weird opportunity where, like, you have to do something if you want to live, you know, and it's walking from here to there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And all
meanwhile.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just on a side tangent here a second. So I was teaching. I teach juniors U.S. history. So we were ending up, we were talking about how people went out west, you know, in the 1800s. And I'm like, you know, and they would just like get in their wagons and just travel out west. It was like manifest destiny.
Yeah.
And they felt like they had to go out there. And the kids were like, oh, all right. Like, was it hard? I'm like, well, think of it this way. I was like, walk from here to the deli a few blocks away and you guys complain and you have modern everything. You know what I mean? I was like, now imagine you had to pack for a months-long journey, walking through all weather with no showering, no bathing, no shelter. You know what I mean? Like, so, and we talk about it, and it's just so funny to see like how the kids just have no concept of how hard that would be. Like, so I'm sure, like, once again, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but it was just comical because they were like, I mean, like, I walk a lot with my friends. I'm like, walking with your friends doesn't mean that you hunt. And like, also I learned in some reading that they used to make like soup pills. I forgot what they called it, but they dried out soup and they would make it into like almost like little pills. And they would carry like, you know, 80 bundles of them or 80 pounds of these soup pills, and then they would defrost them, like they would heat them up so much with like the stuff in it, you know, with the meat and whatever, they would heat it up that it would almost look like a rock, and then they would eat them on the journey, and that like kept them alive.
It also sounds to me like these kids need some Oregon Trail in their life.
Wait, you know? So that's what I was going to say. So I ended up telling them about the Oregon Trail.
Yeah.
And they were like, what the hell is that? So we found it online and we played it. We played the Oregon Trail on the computer and they were like, this is the dumbest shit we've ever seen. I'm like, first off, this is the greatest game ever played. But as we're playing it, I'm like, oh no, this sucks. You are correct. Like, this is, like, it's a lot of reading. The whole game is just reading. It's like, name your character, do this, do that. Oh, what do you want to do here? What do you want to do there? And then,
died of dysentery.
Yeah. Then I, like, made them put their own names in, and I felt bad because, like, this girl put her name, and then they were like, the wagon went across, and the wagon didn't make it. And they were like, oh no. Alex died. And I was like, oh shit. And I looked at her. I'm like, I was like, it was a different Alex. She's like, there's no other Alex. I'm like, you're dead. Let me tell you. You didn't make the trip. You suck. Yeah,
that's how hard it was back then. Right? No, so. The Oregon Trail was the coolest thing when I was in. I mean, listen, I don't know if anybody was just like, man, this is I'm definitely playing this instead of Doom or whatever. But nobody was doing that. But
no one was doing that.
But it was really like, it was always exciting when it was Oregon Trail Day in the computer class or whatever, because it was us getting to play video games during school, right?
Yeah.
And everybody, of course, they part of the game is you have to go hunting for meat and for fur, right? And that's all anybody wanted to do, because that was the closest to an actual video game, was to go and you'd go out there and you'd see a bear, and if you shoot the bear, you know, your little pixel pellet would hit it, and you suddenly have whatever. So nobody would pack any other provisions except for like ammunition and guns.
That's all you needed.
And none of us, nobody lived because.
Meanwhile, like I told the kids, I was like, we're doing this realistic. I was like, I'm not packing any guns because none of you know how to shoot. I was like, all we're packing is food and you better hope we make it. You know, and it was like, but it was fun. They had a good time with it.
This is your very first thing of Stephen King that you read. Does this make you want to read other short stories, or are you like, no, this is cool?
You know, if I die having only read this Stephen King, I would be happy. No, you know what? The truth is, like, I want to read. Like, yeah. I really, you know, I really do want to read. I just can't get into books. I don't know.
Yeah.
I tell my mom, I was like, I think that something's wrong with me, maybe. I just don't have the attention span for it. I was like, maybe you should have put me on medicine when I was young. But you messed up. It's too late. Now I'm too far gone. So, cause like my brother's a big reader, my wife, my mom's an author, by the way. So my mom is an author. My mom wrote a bunch of books.
Yeah.
She's been published. She's been writing short stories forever. She's written books herself about a book called Given Away. It was about her mother's sister, when they were young in Italy. It's a true story, was given to a relative. Because like that was common back then. If you had too many children, you would give away one of yours basically to a family that couldn't. And it's about like her living her life and my grandma living her life. And they had such different lives, but you know, they have the same parents, but like one sister had like a crappy life and the other one had a great life, you know? And it was like, and then they reconnect back in America essentially, and realize that like their lives were not the same. And meanwhile, you know, so like even my mom's books, which I know the story and I know the characters, I struggle getting through them. I'm just not a reader. I don't know. Like I start, I'm into it. And then after 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm into doing pushups while I read. And then I start doing pushups and then I'm like, you know what? I'll just do the pushups.
Yeah.
And I also don't work out. So that shows how much I like reading.
May I suggest an audiobook option? Have you tried audiobooks?
Yeah, I don't have audiobooks either. I know. I'm gonna try. That's my goal for 2025.
Well, I could say audiobooks are a great
segue.
They're kind of a great. I wouldn't even call them training wheels, but they're great in. I grew up reading. I fucking loved it. I was a bookworm as a kid. I would look forward to summers, not because, you know, not because I hated school, but because, you know, when I wasn't in school, I could just read, and I would read fiction all day, all night. I have a fucking podcast about an author and I read for the podcast, but my reading time, like I will play a video game. I will listen to a podcast. I will watch TV. Like I'll do pretty much anything except for read. And I think I broke myself a little bit of the habit, but I think audiobooks fill in some of that space, whether it's, I don't know, just driving to the grocery store and walking around, and you can have them in your earbuds, or, you know, if you have a commute, you know, that's a big thing as well.
And that's the thing, like, you know, my wife, like, will read a book and be audiobooking it. So it's like kind of crazy to me, you know, like she'll be literally like in the middle of reading it, then I got to run to the store, listen to it on the thing. And then by the end of the day, she had read a whole book. I'm like, how? she's like, well, I haven't put it down. Even when I'm on the road, I'm still mm-hmm. on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Well, I would suggest there's a short story collection that this came from, Nightmares and Dreamscapes. If you do end up ever doing an audiobook thing, they have a killer roster of readers. Whoopi Goldberg reads this one for that.
That's cool.
For that stuff. Tim Curry reads a story in there called Crouch End, which was it's like King doing Lovecraft shit. And it's a story about an American couple getting lost in London and maybe slipping into an alternate universe. Cool. They're looking around and it gets real dark real quick. It's just a wonderful, I think Matthew Broderick reads one and Lisa Simpson reads one, the lady who plays Lisa.
Yeah. You know.
So it becomes a little bit more like a radio play, doing an audiobook thing like that.
Yeah.
So.
Listen, I'm not opposed to, cause my wife's always like, don't you want to hear the classics? Like, don't you want to just know? And I'm like, I do.
Let me go do these push-ups first, though.
I really want to, just not today.
Right. Well, it's totally fair. And, you know, I'm very honored that you read this one for us and to talk about it and to bring your perspective as a teacher to this title. So thank you so much for coming on, man. I really do appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on, for sure.
Sure. Do you, before we leave, is there anything you want to plug? Do you want to plug any like website, your podcast, tour dates, any of that stuff? This is going up next week. So,
okay. I was going to say, so I'm currently on tour. I'll be in Long Island. I'll be in New York City. I'll be in San Diego, Phoenix, Arizona, Naples,
all the way
Florida.
To Tacoma? Sorry.
I'll be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Plano, Texas. I will be in a whole bunch of cities, Chicago, LA, Seattle. You could get tickets to any of those at GasparRandazzo.com, or it would probably be easier to just find my Instagram and then find me through there at StandUpRandazzo. My Instagram is StandUpRandazzo, and you could see all my stuff. My podcast is called The Social Studies Podcast with very funny comedian Joe Dombrowski. And maybe, you know, you can message me, give me some book recommendations. I'm dying to know.
yeah, message book recommendations that he will absolutely 100% positively read. So
I want to hear them all.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Gasper. This has been a blast.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
The KingCast is a Fangoria podcast production. The show is produced, hosted, and created by Eric Vespi, that's me, and Scott Wampler. Tira Ansley and Abhi Goel are executive producers. Daniel Danger is our art director, and editing is done by yours truly.